well. You know, as we jump into it, I probably should tell you a little bit about our personal journey at Inspirave and why we, you know, are doing what we are. The company was started in 2014, so we are coming up to our 30-year anniversary. You know, I myself have spent a couple of decades in the intersection of retail and financial services and have had a lot of learnings, as has the rest of our all-star team. And one of the key observations is, even as, the industry is transforming, financial services as much as e-commerce and technology, one small thing called the internet, digital and social transformation that has happened over the past decade or so, is that resulting in the type of outcomes that we want? In particular, I think, you know, when you think about the financial crisis, we still seem to be living in its shadow. Nearly half the country is still living paycheck to paycheck, and yet a third of what we buy, we end up forgetting or regretting. Since this is a no-holds-barred podcast, I would say one of the original inspirations for Inspirave and this podcast is the second most famous line from the Fight Club, right? Ads have us chasing cars and clothes, doing jobs we hate to buy stuff we don't need. And are we, as an industry, as an ecosystem, as well-intentioned participants, doing our part to solve for that? That really is the genesis of Inspirave. In a nutshell, we help everyone be able to fulfill their big goals, their next big purchase, without having to resort to debt through the power of multiplied savings. So we will be using the hashtag #SaveForWhatMatters clearly to highlight the savings aspect of not just what Inspirave is doing, but as a broader, more figurative theme of what we might be well served by. Inspirave starts off with making sure that when you're buying something, that purchase decision, or which is really a financial decision, is well thought through by your well-wishing community, right? Your friends and family actually get to advise you on what you ought to buy and what you ought not to. You make a thoughtful purchase decision, and if you can't afford it, you end up saving more faster by combining the savings from the merchant with that from your financial institution and the support of friends and family, taking you further than you otherwise would. And that process repeats itself through the power of digital and AI until your wish is fulfilled and the item arrives at your doorstep. So with that, why don't I go around and allow our all-star, fellow podcastees introduce themselves, and we'll get right into it. And I'm sure we'll have some time for some good dialogue and questions at the end as well.
Okay, sure. Hi, my name is Mike Langford. I'm right here in Austin. I'm Austin native. So I run a company called FinServe Marketing, which is a digital marketing agency. We work with financial services companies and technology companies that are looking to sell into those financial services companies. So often they lack the regulatory insights and just really understanding the lay of the land to navigate that space. I'm also in the early stage process of launching a venture fund that will invest in fintech companies. So A2B.VC is the page if you're looking to find out a little bit more about that. So I'm really excited to be here, Om. Thank you for the invitation, and kick it off to you, Ruth.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. Great to be here. Thanks for having us. I'm currently CEO and co-founder of FinCheck, which is a fintech AI company. Our goal is to save time and literally get fintech up to speed to 2017. We can get into it further in the discussion. And our first product is Rapid CFO, which is basically designed to save time for everyone with their finances. Beforehand, my previous role, I was head of the Citibank Startups Accelerator and External Innovation in the Innovation Lab, really looking at fintech startups and helping them innovate and expand and collaborate with Citibank.
And I'm Brent Wiestrom. I'm a reporter with Austin Inno here in Austin, and we're part of a group of publications in Boston, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. And, yeah, I mean, we basically cover the tech and startup scene here in Austin on a day-to-day basis and try to write a lot of profiles and talk to a lot of folks like who are on the panel here.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. You know, I think... we can clearly talk about several different things, but you know, one of the things that we often talk about is how commerce and financial services is actually getting revolutionized, right? The quote-unquote fintech revolution. And you know, you don't need me to say that, you know, revolution is a loaded word. It means fundamental changes in the socioeconomic order and improvement of lives. And so, you know, I think one of the things that we ought to probably kick off with is there truly a revolution going on? Who wants to take that?
I would like to take that. I think there's a whole lot of buzz around fintech, and it's been going on for a while now, even though it's relatively new, compared to the fact that financial technology has been around for many, many years. It's just the innovation part that has been more recently looked at. And actually, why is that? And from my perspective, the reason that we see this is that we look at various innovation in different aspects today, and we just realize that in finance, even though there are a lot of new companies that are making a lot of changes, still in most of our day-to-day lives, both for companies and for individuals, we really feel that we're not at 2017. We have to like spend a lot of time doing very simple tasks. Transferring funds still takes a very long time, for the most part, depending on a context. Accounting, there's so many things that just are not compatible with the rest of the technology that we're using today. And therefore, it feels like the fintech revolution is very early on. People are aware of it. But we're today somewhere where we were when smartphones weren't around, but we were already using cell phones. And the same with internet in the 90s when there were a few websites, but it wasn't you know, everywhere. Or when we were using MySpace and various other solutions before Facebook came around and took over. So people are understanding that the fintech revolution is coming, and there are a lot of companies innovating in the space, but there still hasn't been a game changer that took over and really made our life our lives simpler, which is actually what we're trying to build with Rapid CFO and the like. But there are a lot of companies today working on this, including financial institutions.
So, you know, what's interesting to me, I mean, I've been in the financial services industry now for 24 years, my entire career. Actually started answering phones for a company called Boston Financial Data Services, which does a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff for mutual fund companies, right? So this is 1994. I'm answering the phones and going, thank you for calling the Warburg Pincus Funds. This is Mike. And people would ask for a prospectus, or what did the mutual fund close at that day, right? And what I've seen over that 24 years is an evolution, not a revolution, right? How many people have a smartphone in here? I think it's everyone. On that smartphone, how many of you have at least one financial services application? Two? Three? Four? Right? So the smartphone has evolved, right? Uh-huh. And over those years, we now have a financial services device that comes with us. We can pick and choose what apps we put on there, right? We don't need just one big bank to serve as all everything, right? We carry it with us. It's kind of call it the digital wallet. We'll hear people talk about it. But like, to me, it's more than that, right? It's all financial services are there. And what's really made that possible over the last several years has been falling walls, just what we saw with web dev, right? In web development, we saw Ruby on Rails, WordPress, and all sorts of other open source technologies that made it really easy for somebody to take a technology and rapidly bring it to the consumer. Whereas back in the early 90s or mid-90s to early 2000s, when the first dot-com revolution, it would take $10 million to bring an e-commerce site online. Now two kids, you know, in their dorm room can bring it online by Monday. That's amazing. Well, we're seeing the same thing happen in financial services, right? We've got lots of things like Yodlee exposing APIs for financial services to be developed, right, and delivered to the customer relatively cheap and quickly on any device that they want to. The smartphone also represents a huge distribution chain. It's been easier to deliver those products, right? Interesting little fact here. 1956, the interstate highway system is rolled up. 6 years later, a company called Walmart happens. And Walmart expands all across the country. Why? Because ease of distribution, right? Can get goods and services or goods to places with ease and cheaply. 2007, the iPhone comes out. 2013, an app called Robinhood, which is the first ever mobile-only brokerage platform that charges zero commissions. You can buy shares of stock without ever paying a commission on your phone. 6 years difference, right? Distribution has changed, right? So for me, it's been an evolution, not a revolution.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with Mike's point. Like, my perspective, anytime you call something a revolution, I'm immediately skeptical as a journalist because everybody's company is a revolution of some kind. But it is a big term, so, you know, it's a question of what you really mean by it. And I think Mike hit the point is, at least from my perspective, the revolution has been more in the distribution systems, the smartphone, and the ways to reach people. I don't know that I've seen the big splash that would qualify in my mind as revolution in fintech.
Yeah, I agree that we haven't seen it. I just think we will see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. So I think, you know, a bit of what I heard here, Ruth, you pointed out that there are some foundational gaps in the way everyone is currently being served by the financial services industry, and clearly now financial technology, or what is simply fintech. You know, as much as commerce, you know, really good historical perspective from you, Mike. You know, so I think if I kind of connect the dots here, it does seem that, you know, to your point around us getting primed up for a revolution, that the time is in a lot of ways now. And, you know, I tend to agree that there is a lot of merit behind that. In particular, you know, I think there are a lot of folks that I think are still underserved, whether it be in this country as much as across the world. Sure, you know, I think the mobile phone has dramatically changed lives for all of us as it pertains specifically to financial services and commerce. You know, how much change has it merited, right? I think there have been recent news articles that talk about the change has having been more dramatic, which is great, in places like Kenya with the M-Pesa and, you know, other parts of the world. China is a great example of that. And yet there is a lot of inequity, right? I think the number of folks that are unbanked or underbanked in this country, according to the FDIC, is actually increasing, not decreasing, right? We talked about how, you know, commerce and this obsession around reducing friction, right? Push button, get stuff, is resulting in, you know, this ubiquity of instant gratification, right? Doesn't matter, nor do, you know, Amazon Prime or any programs like that care about whether you can afford the product. You know, what seems to be more of the focus is not around knowing, you know, whether you really need, want, or aspire for the product as much as the ease and convenience of getting it, right? So in that context, right, who's sort of speaking for financial health, financial wellness, and the ability to forge a financial path for, you know, every individual to kind of reach their full, you know, financial potential?
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly tempting landscape for anybody, and I don't know, I guess my first, personally, my first experience with that was when I was banking with Wells Fargo, and I got to, they started breaking things down by where you're spending money, and I look at my bank account, I'm like, my restaurant and bar bill is outpacing like any other expense of mine. And so you see these little things, and to your point, I mean, there's a lot of people who are making those bad decisions, and you don't even realize it until something comes along and kind of shows you that snapshot of what you're actually doing, and it's kind of a wake-up call, and really important to your financial future, too.
Yeah, well, then I think that is great. So, you know, I think, you know, now that, you know, some would argue that... you know, Peter Thiel is in vogue with, you know, kind of a new administration and, you know, clearly a new leader of the fearless world, right? One of his quotes that, you know, that I feel really strikes a chord is kind of, we wanted, you know, flying cars and we ended up with 140 characters, right? you know, I kind of think of that as a fairly non-trivial statement. In that we need to be fairly deliberate about the future that we want. And then through some combination of, you know, clearly the audaciousness of entrepreneurs like the ones that we have on this podcast today, you know, really find a way to that future, because otherwise you might end up with outcomes that you do not desire.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, if we're looking at what Brent said as well, I think part of the issue is that people kind of have maybe a psychological barrier in whatever's related to their finances, both in companies and entrepreneurs, but a lot of people also consumers. Literally, it's a headache, and it's something that you're trying to avoid or to postpone, and sometimes you don't even deal with it at all, both because it's time-consuming, but also because you don't always know what are those tasks that you need to do that are time-consuming. And it's part of what's actually doesn't make sense in this day and age, because most of these things you shouldn't really have to do. A lot of things are regulatory or bureaucratical and so forth, but it's a lot of it is like literally everybody puts it off because it's such a headache, and because there's so many, there's so much knowledge actually that you have to take into account, and then you have to consult with financial professionals or look it up online, and literally there's so much that is unknown that, and since it has so much effect on your life in so many ways, it makes it even much more scary.
Yeah, excuse me. In the intro, you kind of mentioned two. I think there's two things you mentioned, or I interpreted as hearing two things. You know, one was the underserved market, right? The unbanked, the underserved market. And there's a lot of people really attempting to help that marketplace. I mean, CFSI, which is a J.P. Morgan-funded $30 million venture fund, effectively, is investing aggressively in startups that are helping the underserved market. And we've seen a few startups here at South By. Wise Banyan, who demoed at the event that I host, is one such event, one such startup that is really trying to make it easy for people to get access to a financial advisor online, you know, for their first dollar type of thing. There's a lot of activity there. The challenge is, and we'll see if this happens, right? Historically, it's been difficult to serve that marketplace because it's difficult to make money on a dollar with account balances that are only a dollar, right? You have things like all the regulations that you're required to apply to every account, right? So it's compliance. You have to have statements. You have to have call centers. Like, what if this person has a question, right? You have to have a whole bunch of stuff that goes on behind the scenes, accounting, just accounting, right? That alone is extremely expensive, right? And then you have to audit that, right? There's all sorts of stuff that goes on behind the scenes in a financial services environment that's expensive. And so when you have low dollars, it's really tough to be profitable, especially since it costs hundreds of dollars to acquire a single customer. And customer acquisition costs for financial services is ridiculously expensive. I think Fidelity spends something like $400 just to get a customer in the door. It's a lot of money, and if they're earning, let's say, 50 basis points, 0.5% on your money, takes a while to earn that money back if you have a small balance, right? So that's one side of the equation. Mm-hmm. And the other side of the equation is, are we helping people become more financially healthy, I think was kind of the other question you asked mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And we can go deep into that as well. For me, it's like, well, that just depends upon the goal of the app or what the company is trying to develop, right? I have a joking thing, and I ask you if we could be PG-13 here in your podcast. But, you know, listen, if you're developing an application or a company, you're either helping somebody get laid or you're helping them not die. And that's really the spectrum on financial services applications. You know, I'm helping you with financial wellness and so forth. I'm helping you not die. Extremely unsexy. We're talking Mint. We're talking Quicken, right? Very small percentage of the population goes to the gym and works out and eats well. Same thing in their financial lives. Very small percentage of the population is motivated to do that by the notion of, I don't want to die. Everybody likes to get laid. Right? And by late, I mean everybody likes the new shiny thing. Everybody likes the notion that they can buy now, right? Uh-huh. And what you're trying to solve for, right? Uh-huh. Have it now, pay for it later. I want the new shiny thing. I want the bigger house. I want the nicer car, nicer clothes. I want to be able to go out with my friends and run up the bar tab, right? So I could just lay some context here. That's range of topics we can
go. I think this is great. And, you know, what I will say is, you know, the inspiration behind Inspirave has really been around the underserved market, right? To your point around the underlying economics and the incentive structures in serving the underserved market, I feel there is not just a big, but a massive opportunity there. And I typically like to talk about it as the underserved market rather than the underbanked or unbanked market, because the language around the underbanked or the unbanked is posited on the fact that being banked is sort of the state of nirvana, right? And I think you don't need to look at, the change that's happening to realize that, not just in this country, but in a lot of the world, people are getting empowered through, currencies that don't necessarily rely on a traditional financial institution. I think at Inspirave, we are all about making delayed gratification cool again, right? The way we think about financial empowerment, is financial health is just a stop in the journey to reach your fullest potential, right? So in a lot of ways, the contrast that I would draw to, making sure you don't die and financial health is, let's say, someone in this audience or otherwise, it has potential to compete in the Olympics. You don't go to them and tell them, hey, it's sufficient just for you to be healthy, right? That's just a point that you need to reach in order to then reach your fullest potential. And the way I look at it, right, commerce and financial services has that opportunity, right, to help every individual reach that fullest potential in the way that cat videos on YouTube do not. Comments, questions, disagreements?
I think it's a good point. I think in general this speaks to the difference that Mike, you started talking about between fintech companies and financial institutions, where they're really the perspective or the way of thinking. I mean, financial institutions, since it's been around for so long, the focus is both on the customer acquisition, but also in general, the processes, the regulations, the various technology, the legacy systems, instead of looking at the product and the user and what they need and what they want, and then turning everything else around to facilitate that. Of course, there are reasons for this, and there are various things that have to happen. But what startups do is move forward, move quickly, and then figure everything out accordingly. as opposed to the other way around. I mean, it's really important, of course, because we're dealing with finances and you have to be very careful and the trust in the financial system and also in the financial institutions and as well with the financial fintech startups is extremely important. But really, what is the first focus and the first goal is what drives the change.
Yeah, no, great points. You know, I know you were in a session earlier last week, right? Around the Uber moment for financial services, and you know, I mean. Let me kind of pose this as a question. Do we have the enabling conditions for the Uber of financial services? You know, if you forget about, you know, a lot of the perceived dysfunctions within Uber and think about, you know, it from the perspective that has made it one of the most valuable companies in the planet, I think you see a few things, right? You see a lot of courage, right, on the part of the founder. You see a willingness for an ecosystem, primarily in Silicon Valley, but also elsewhere, to come together and exert their gravitational force, right, on end users, on the public at large, on governments and regulators, city by city, town by town, country by country. And, you know, over a period of time, rallying all of those resources and, you know, ingesting massive amounts of capital, you have Uber. Do we think that taking all of those check marks into account, do we think that we in financial technology is ready for something like that?
I think it's already happening, and so you don't have a like, big shining star that everybody's going to go, look, that's Uber. They completely disrupted everybody. Nobody saw that coming, but now that I see it, oh, my God, it was so obvious, right? Cabs suck, right? Black cars are super expensive. Like, why shouldn't I be able to just call a car, and it comes to me wherever I am in an instant, and it doesn't smell, and it's not riding on bologna skins for tires and rickety, you know, like the person's polite. Like, so... It seems so obvious, right, that Uber is happening. But there's lots of stuff that's doing the same thing. That's financial services in many ways, right? And financial products have been a pain in the butt to deal with. There's been some they've been really expensive, hidden fees, stuff that kind of either you feel like you're getting ripped off or you actually are getting ripped off. That's been around for a while. They've been very complex. There's been purposeful kind of... hiding of information or making it very difficult to understand the product. I mean, financial services are the only institution that will actually, I mean, only industry that speaks Greek to you. They'll use terms like alpha and beta to talk to you about how performance is going. That is actually Greek, right? Mm-hmm. But we're seeing a change there, right? Like, I'm excited by payment apps, right? Things like Venmo and Google Wallet. It's really exciting. Like, suddenly money I get money digitally. I can completely skip the bank once it's into that system. I can transfer money with a click of a button to you right here on the stage, and you'd have it show up on your screen. Really cool stuff. Making stuff that's Uber-ish, mm-hmm. If you want to call that. So it's exciting. I think that the next phase for sticking on payments there, just to kind of on this thought, is do vendors accept it? Right? Does your landlord or your bank accept Venmo to pay your mortgage or your rent, right? When you walk into a store, can you buy a cup of coffee with Venmo or Google Wallet and the like? And is it easy to do? Because I love like Apple Pay for it, but it just still is clunky. It doesn't work quick, right? But when that starts to happen, I think we're going to have some really exciting stuff.
And I think, you know, if you look at Uber, all the enabling conditions are there. Everybody understands transportation in their own way. I feel like that Uber-type moment for fintech is a little bit different because so many people lack the basic financial education to have an interest in that space, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to see how that's of value great to them. Point. Everybody knows, I want to get from here to my house right now. The fastest way to do it is Uber, and somebody tells you that in one sentence, and you download it, and you're ready to go. Somebody tells me about a financial app, and I feel like I have to go back to school a little bit, go to the glossary, and that's with a pretty good education, you know? And there's a lot of people who have been exposed to far less. So I feel like that barrier to entry is pretty high in fintech, and that's maybe why there hasn't been, in my mind, that big splash. You know, Venmo, PayPal, those things are really great, and I think they're so well known because that is the other most accessible aspect of it. Is I want to give you $20 because you know you paid for dinner last night. Everybody gets that, mm-hmm. But there's a lot of lack of financial education to understand the value of other things. Like, did you know that you know you can get some stock for free without a transaction fee? I didn't know that there should have been a transaction fee in the first place. Right. You know, so I think that's kind of the hurdle that has to happen, and that probably starts in elementary school in a lot of cases.
I think that's also the opportunity. At the same time, because some of these things also for companies, and you mentioned vendors and so forth, will they start accepting these things? Companies, pay extreme, really large amounts on accounting and on finance and so forth, and many of this is because the entrepreneurs don't want to deal with it themselves. But some of these things are extremely repetitive, and really in this day and age, the fact that receipts that are typed, printed or that are sent an email, then have to be sometime typed by an actual person, which is some of the things that our first product takes care of in Rapid CFO. Like some of these things, exactly the fact that you don't have the knowledge, but you're paying someone who has the knowledge, but even that person sometimes, really it's not the best use of their time to do something that a computer can do. And you can actually then use a human brain to improve these things and to get into better lives for everybody. It's really ridiculous, but part of it is that a lot of us don't even know what are these things, including entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs themselves outsource these things. I mean, these are things that are never a focus of anyone's lives or businesses. It's always something in the background. It's always something that you have to have as a must and that you know is important, but you lack the information. And the people who have that information, for them, it's, of course, an advantage to keep it that way. But at the end of the day, as with any industry, it's going to be disrupted as well.
I think what Ruth is talking about is actually the most sexy part of fintech right now. I mean, no joke. The behind the scenes, what I call the drivers, right? Because a lot of, what I mentioned earlier about like how expensive it is to serve a customer, well, a lot of that can be crushed down with what Ruth was just talking about, right? Of making it easier. I mean, there's in many financial services companies, they're still using flat files and then uploading them from, downloading from one system, uploading them into another system. And there's literally, rooms full of people still like manually crunching stuff. My wife works for a large financial services company, and you will be amazed at how much manual stuff is still happening in 2017. And they have like all the computer resources in the world and all the technology in the world, but what ends up happening is, it's still cheaper to just and easier just to do the way we've always been doing, right? So there's a really lot of cool stuff happening. I mean, much in the way for developers, as an example, Stripe. Has everybody here heard of Stripe? So Stripe, it's a multi-billion-dollar fintech company. And these two young college kids, two brothers, were sitting in the dorm room. They wanted to make it easy to accept payments on a website and realized it's not easy to accept payments on the website. It used to be extremely expensive. You had to pay all sorts of high monthly fees and so forth to payment providers to process credit cards online. And you had to apply, and it took forever. These guys created all the back-end stuff, all the APIs and so forth, and made it so you could just take a little snippet of JavaScript, smack it on your site, and accept a credit card. That's the type of stuff that accelerates. You want to talk about revolutionary, right? You just made it easier for every developer in the world who wants to accept money on their website, for whatever that is, to do it like that. And they didn't have to spend weeks on implementation and testing and so forth. It was just throw it up, and it's done like now. And now companies like WordPress have APIs. You just add Stripe processing. We use FreshBooks for our invoicing. They have Stripe integration and Squarespace and so forth. So all these things are there. So that, to me, is really the exciting stuff we're seeing.
I think that this is great. And, we actually also at Inspirave use Stripe for our payment processing. So somewhere I'll expect a commission check from the Collision Brothers in the mail here. But I think there's really good dialogue here and contrast that I want to bring to the fore, right? I think Brent made an excellent point, I think in some ways reinforcing, Ruth, what you talked about earlier, which is some of the fundamentals, are sort of gaping holes, right? We as part of the citizenry, are not consistently... And in fact are lacking some of the basic levels of financial literacy, right? I think what's happening in the non-payments financial technology ecosystem, right, with some of the payments specific examples that you provided, Mike, right? Venmo, great example. Stripe, another great example. I would argue that there is, potentially, and leave it for you to perhaps take this, there's potentially a tension between commerce and payments per se, a lot of which is about reducing friction and making it easier to pay. Agreed, some of that is back-end infrastructure, mm-hmm. and I'm talking more about front-end. But in the process of making it easier to pay, right, pushing a button and having stuff arrive, we've also created the imminent danger of people that don't necessarily have the best financial health to make decisions that are not in their best interests. And they don't necessarily have a fiduciary. They might think of financial institutions or banks as fiduciaries, but I don't think you need me to point to any particular bank to say that role is often missing on the part of someone who is truly caring about your best financial outcomes, especially in light of the fact that the incentive structures for the customer to win and for the bank or the fintech company to make money isn't necessarily perfectly aligning. I would say that at Inspirave, we've actually spent a lot of time thinking about alignment of incentives, right? So in as much as I'd like you to think that Inspirave is a pretty app with pretty green colors that will help you stay and get even more in the green, I would say our fundamental alignment and breakthrough at Inspirave is really around aligning people's ability to reach their big goals, right, with the ability for partners in the ecosystem, a merchant and a financial institution, to be able to make money out of that deal in a fair and transparent fashion in a way that is in the best interest of the user or customer being served. Sort of to kind of round out the discussion on a revolution, and perhaps this is a matter of perspective and levels, Venmo is great, but it ain't no Uber, right? It was, and the company that acquired Venmo, PayPal is also, a great and probably a great shining example out there, some would say. But at the end of the day, I think in order to have a real revolution, a real Uber, we are talking about a standalone company that at a very foundational level does things very differently. So do those enabling conditions of a startup within financial technology or commerce have access to the talent, to the trust, to the capital from private markets, in the same way as larger financial institutions have access to those very same things from the public markets, and actually cumulatively financial services institutions and banks, that is, spend $500 trillion annually on technology, right? So if we think about, you know, aspiring entrepreneurs here having access to a fraction of that capital, could they bring about greater change?
I think that sometimes this access to capital and access to, large number of technology, it's mostly by the financial institutions, is sometimes a liability. I think as an example, when I was at Citi, I remember a conversation I had with someone who runs one of the technology organizations within the bank, which is has close to 100,000 people, and he managed 10,000 of these, and he told me, "I have 10 and I need 2. I don't know what to do." So literally, the fact that they have a lot of technology people sometimes is a liability, and you cannot always move fast and innovate, and sometimes you really are bound to your existing systems, and as you said, you cannot really think out of the box or do things differently if you have necessarily those resources. Also, when we look at startup companies, sometimes raising too quickly is something that is a liability as well, because then you have pressure to spend it and you don't always do it in the best interest of your users. So looking at that, and having said that, I want to mention, you keep saying the Uber moment, there are currently 10 companies across the world that have the same service as Uber and are over $10 billion. So like literally, Uber as an example, you can compare it to financial institutions. There are a number of them. They're just different geographies, and sometimes they have the same geography, so Lyft and so forth. And therefore, I think if we're looking at a game changer, I think Facebook is a better example. 2 billion users. So it could be that the revolution will have a number of large players, in the same way that today there are a number of large financial institutions, and then smaller ones and so forth. It's just that what we're probably be looking at in the next one or two, maybe even three decades, and then the change that's coming, we don't know whether it's going to be one or the other, but it's very clear that the pace or the way things are today, with all the literally people that are, you mentioned, doing manual things, and these are people that can be the ones helping make better financial decisions or helping. I mean, because many times these are people who, literally someone who works at a bank today, even a low-level employee at a branch, will have a better understanding of what mortgage to take than I would as running innovation. And these are the kind of things that the kind of people that are today doing manual tasks that you want to channel to other things and have technology do those simple mundane tasks.
Great. Well, I think this has been very, very spirited. I think we are getting to that part of this podcast where we would welcome questions from the audience and reflect on some of the topics that we've discussed here. Personally for me, what makes South by Southwest special is, it is a forum, in my personal experience, like no other, that, it's really fuels the fire of starry-eyed entrepreneurs like the ones that we have in this podcast as much as those we have in our audience here. So we do think big things are possible that will massively change lives. I think it's quite amazing. I think, Brent, you were pointing to an article earlier around how, a lot of the sessions at South By are increasingly sponsored by big Fortune 500 companies. And, at some level, we are very thankful of that. South by Southwest Super Accelerator, which happened for the first time this year, actually had the chief technology officer of Amazon as one of the judges. I think we appreciate the support, I'm sure, of larger corporates, for this forum as much as everywhere else, but I guess at the risk of not being invited back to South by Southwest in upcoming years, I would just kind of throw it out there in the open around, do we need to do more to continue to fuel that fire, right? Is the next a Twitter that announced itself publicly at this forum several years ago going to happen, right? Can they have outcomes that are independent of acquisitions by larger financial institutions and or larger tech organizations, right? The Google, Amazons, Facebooks, and Apples.
Did you mention you wanted to have questions from the audience?
Sure. I think why don't we segue into that as well?
Yes, please.
Sure. I think there's a mic going around too.
No. Sure. Just wanted to ask, what effect do you think blockchain will have on trust and any developments that are happening in fintech
or financial institutions?
So that's a fantastic question, and I think there's a lot of talk about that. So does everybody know what blockchain is in the room, just to make sure? Okay. So we have a fairly good understanding. It's basically a ledger system, right? And everybody has a copy of the ledger, and we get to see all the transactions that have happened. So it's fantastic. So from a trust perspective, I think it's absolutely fantastic, and you're starting to see large financial institutions make pretty substantial investments there. And it could, in theory, be the catalyst that solves some of the problems we were talking about the back office expenses, right, that go along with trying to audit and account for things that are happening. When you have something that's automated, that's automatically doing it, and you don't have to go through as much of a pain in the butt to get that stuff done, is there. One little quick tiny note, and I'll kick it over to you guys, is a lot of people conflate blockchain with Bitcoin. And even though it's the thing that Bitcoin's running on, they're not necessarily one and the same. And Bitcoin, I think, would give us a whole another level of conversation. So,
I don't have much to add to that, but that distinction between Bitcoin and blockchain is important and easily overlooked, I think.
I think, I agree in the sense that it will have a positive effect on the back end, but I think overall, it actually won't have a substantial effect in the sense that there is a trust in the financial system today. There will be trust in the financial system tomorrow. Part of the reason that there hasn't been so much innovation in finance in past years is because people, both in companies but also consumers, weren't ready. The market wasn't ready to accept new solutions, including blockchain. And today, people are ready to accept new solutions, and they're willing to trust in these new fintech startups and the new innovations of financial institutions. And therefore, the trust is not as big as an issue, because also, legacy systems and financial systems that have been around for years sometimes violated our trust in various ways. And therefore, it's not that we're looking for a technology that we can trust in. And it will help to change things in the back end, but most people, including companies, won't actually have any huge difference in their behavior or change because of that specifically, in my view.
Great. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. What are the questions?
Hi, my name is Lee Flounders, and I'm from New Zealand. New Zealand, we're obviously quite spiritually and economically quite close to China, and there's a lot of communications, and we're quite aware of the technology coming out of China. From an American perspective, from your perspective, I'd be interested in hearing what you think are the new fintech technologies coming out of China, how Americans actually look at that and what your perception is? Because the one thing I've noticed at South by Southwest is from a financial services point of view, going to a number of the presentations and also meeting with a number of American individuals who are involved in fintech, I've noticed that there hasn't been as much of a focus or understanding of China. Can you give me your thoughts on that?
Well, I think personally, you know, and I'd welcome the rest of the panel to weigh in as well. I think what's happening in China is actually several years ahead of where we are now. I think you see institutions like Alibaba with Alipay doing things that non-financial services companies, you know, here or anywhere else in the world, I do not seeing there. So when I think about folks that are at the forefront, I would point to China and their just very recent announcement that they'll have a more holistic, credit scoring system going forward that takes into account not just your traditional credit score, but your social footprint, your digital footprint, and a variety of other factors. You know, I don't see that coming out of North America or any other geography. So I would, from that perspective, say that they are, in a lot of ways, leading the charge.
You know, it's interesting about that. So I think there's two things. One is, having the luxury of being the largest market in the world, I think Americans as a general don't give a crap about the rest of the world. You know, like they're very insular. We kind of think about ourselves. We don't think about other countries more than others. The other thing that's interesting, you bring up something like China. You know, China went from a third world country to a first world country in 30 years. We have the legacy of the entire 20th century and, frankly, the 19th century built into our financial services infrastructure. And that's a lot of entrenched interests that are like, you know what, we're not moving any faster than we feel like moving. And you can't make us because, oh, by the way, many of our regulatory constraints, we're self-regulatory bodies, so we're going to decide where this ship goes, right? It'll move as fast as it has to, but
great point.
No faster.
And I think Africa is one of the places that is also going faster. There are a number of places.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you get the motivation to leapfrog. You know, a lot of Africa is a good example, and so many people skipped desktop, laptop, straight to phone. You know,
right.
And that creates a far different
that's
environment.
Right.
Sure, and you know, hopefully those are lessons that you know that no matter where we are in the world, whether it's in New Zealand, Australia, or any of the other geographies, including, the 10+ million that are underserved in this country, can learn from. I think there are probably opportunities to fundamentally improve the financial lives of a lot of people across geographies. Happy to take a couple of other questions, if there are any, and then perhaps we can segue into some closing comments from our fellow podcastees here.
I'm curious, is that a Pittsburgh Pirates hat that the New Zealanders are wearing? I want to hear the story behind that hat after this podcast.
He's wearing a Giants shirt too, right?
A Globetrotter, true Globetrotter. Okay.
I mean, I guess to me, you know, he brings up an interesting question, and this is more of a question for you guys with expertise in this space, is both in the United States and when you look internationally, to what extent are regulatory issues the barrier?
I think today in some ways they are a barrier. I don't know if the barrier. Sometimes the regulatory environment is what caused processes that take literally some of the, you mentioned self-regulatory entities and so forth. So it's what helped shape the environment. But as you mentioned, Uber, or we can look at also Airbnb. I mean, in Israel, for instance, where I'm from, Uber is actually only used by cab drivers, and regular people cannot do it because of the regulatory environment doesn't allow for it yet, even though the prime minister already said he is all for it, but hasn't been able to change it yet. for political reasons and in the lobby of the cab drivers, basically. And we look at Airbnb and what happened in New York City. People want this, but still the, you know, the city and the municipality is not enabling it. So I think, you know, maybe these struggles will go on for maybe a decade or two. And definitely in financial institutions and the regulatory environment, maybe it'll take, you know, 3 decades. But at the end of the day, these things will die. And this is all remnants from the past. And as you mentioned, maybe 200 years of the way that we've been doing things in the Western world. But it's going to end.
Yeah. I mean, regulation is a constraint, right? It's guardrails. This is the lane you have to travel in, and don't go out of this lane, and don't go to the left very often. That's really what the regulation will do to affirm. I mean, I'm most familiar with the investment regulations. You know, think about regulations on advertising and investing, right? So I was the head of social strategy for a company called Socialware here in Austin that made it possible for financial advisors to use social media in their practices. Well, there's some rules to the road. A financial advisor just can't go on Twitter and just start tweeting away like, hey, invest in this. You should come use me. I'm the best financial advisor, right? There's rules about like what they're allowed to say. And then, oh, by the way, any electronic communication has to be archived. It has to be supervisable by a principal at the firm and the compliance, right? So there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. And those are in place to protect the consumer. Right, so we kind of full circle what Inspiray is trying to do here, right? The regulations aren't there just to be a pain in the ass, right? They're there sometimes to protect the industry. Actually, protecting the consumer does protect the industry, right? If consumers start getting ripped off, we start seeing a 1929 movement where people really, really lose trust in the system, and then financial services break down entirely. So we do have to have some rules there. So. It's a foot on the brake a little bit, but I don't think it's really slowing anything down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would echo, I think, in a lot of ways, what you've outlined and kind of draw a little bit of a contrast in that regulations are never the leading indicator, right? It's the technology breakthrough that happens, and then the regulations sort of follow around it to make sure that the guardrails are there. What I do find as an opportunity is, I think a culture that often cites regulators and regulations as a reason not to innovate, right? Mm-hmm. As a reason to perpetuate the status quo. And I think that, is both a challenge and an opportunity. I would point to the stateside, the OCC's proposal for banking charter for fintech companies. And for understandable reasons, there are lobbies for and against it. You know, I would say the ultimate arbitrator is really, do the regulations, as Mike pointed out, leave the consumer better served. And if they do, then we ought to, right? Same thing with innovation. It's not about financial technology companies and commerce ventures versus incumbents. It's really about who is going to have the most massive impact in fundamentally improving lives.
Yeah, I think, and this could be my closing statement, going, adding to what you both just talked about, it's definitely also an opportunity because the whole reason of these regulations are to better serve the companies and the consumers. And therefore, automating that with our, right now beta of Rapid CFO and making sure that you don't have to deal with all these regulations and that it's all taken care of for you. And therefore, if there are changes in regulations, still it won't affect you. Because it only means that technology companies, the innovators, will just adjust accordingly to keep protecting you. And therefore, fintechs such as yourself as well, and a lot of the financial institutions too, if they're looking forward, what they will end up doing and innovating in this way is literally taking all the regulations and utilizing them to serve better the companies and the consumers.
Great. So I think with that, you know, want to give a round of applause to our fellow podcastees here on stage, as much as yourselves. Thank you for joining us for this dialogue that shall continue. If you're listening on the air or to a recording of this, know that you can follow the dialogue on hashtag SaveForWhatMatters, and we shall continue and see you again on a future episode of this podcast and in person for what remains of the great South by Southwest Festival. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Woo. We are up.